Dmitri Pokudov. Okay. A lot more difficult to say than Ian Brown, I have to say. Couldn't you have an easier name?
Well, it's pretty typical for Russia, to be honest.
Yeah. Fair enough. Welcome to GCP Life, episode number 61 for the 29th of March, 2024. GCP Life is sponsored by Mantle Group. At Mantle Group, we make your Google Cloud solutions possible. And I'm your host, Stephen Bancroft. On today's show, Azure jumps on the bandwagon. Apigee finds some momentum. Find out why you better not have any publicly exposed service account keys. Plus, NVIDIA is shaking things up in the AI wars. But before we get to any of that, I'd like to introduce the co-host of the show, Dmitri Pokudov. How are you going, Dimmy?
Hey, Steve. Good. How are you?
Good, mate. Good. What's your fortnight look like? You been up to anything interesting?
Yeah, well, DDD Melbourne conference that I was one of the co-organizers just happened. So, yeah, there was a lot of work put into it. That happened. And then I was just chilling after, really.
Chilling after. Actually, we haven't had a community news item for a while. So, I think we need to get back into the momentum of doing that. You're just announcing what's coming up over the next couple of weeks. I think we'll make sure we do that for the next episode. Yep. Well, that sounds cool. Did you have a talk on, or you just organizing?
No. I was just helping with the website. So, it was getting into those lands of Next.js and other JavaScript fun stuff, which I'm not touching too much really. So, yeah, that was interesting. Yeah.
You were telling me a story of what happened with the UK post offices.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that was a closing keynote from Ivan San. Yeah, that I really enjoyed. Probably my favorite talk from the whole conference. And there was like many very good talks, but that one was close to my heart. But it was the talk was about software disasters. One of the examples that I didn't hear before, but was about UK post offices, where it's like, through like a long period of time, it's like a 10 or so years, there would be like multiple lawsuit cases and even like a case of suicide, because the balances were not actually like getting along at the post offices, because they were owned just by like a normal people. And then like after like the 10 years or so, it actually was found that there was a issue, just a software issue with the post terminals, and that's why the balances sometimes could just go into the negative and sometimes into positive.
And people thought they owed all this money.
And then there was an article from one of the like a developers from that time at the company who shipped the software. It's a big international company, and yeah, so they just said that that software should have never been released. But the whole idea of the talk was that as a developers, we actually have a huge impact on others' life, and that sometimes we should kind of think about like what are we shipping, and but more about like, I guess, speaking up and making sure that we are responsible for the code that we are writing and delivering.
And testing and making sure that dodgy code's not getting shipped. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Speaking of messing up people's lives, did you hear that some people couldn't get their McDonald's? I mean, it was horrific.
Yeah, that's right. We were driving through, like trying to go to the drive-through to get our ice cream cones. So yeah, the kids were very, very much disappointed. Yes.
Yeah. So obviously, recently McDonald's has moved to Google Cloud. This is why this tweaked our interest. And they're saying it wasn't related. They had a big outage and it wasn't related to the move to Google Cloud. Look, someone's pushed a code release and it was the wrong thing, or they've made some change. But they were offline for, what'd they say, a good 12 hours or something?
Yeah, yeah, it looks like a big outage. And like, especially, I don't know, the global, right? That's the most global, interesting. Yeah. Like, yeah, if it's like, I don't know, even like isolated to one country, or I don't know, maybe multiple countries, that's one thing. But global is, yeah, that's probably huge.
Yeah.
Imagine being the person behind, like someone that pushed the code, and then it's just like you pushed it and maybe go and grab some coffee or something, you're coming back, and it's like
they probably have one global load balancer that everything goes through, and that's what they've screwed up.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, as they always say, there must be DNS, right?
Must be DNS. Always blame DNS. Exactly.
Yeah.
And also during the fortnight, just quickly before we do get on the news items, I got a couple other stories as well, but Azure now are offering free egress along with Google and AWS. And that really is driven by this new EU ruling, European Union regulations, which the Act calls for cloud providers to abolish switching charges within 3 years to make things more open and transparent. Another story which I've started to follow is the Australian government's digital ID. Now, this is still in its infancy, but a decision has been made that it will be voluntary at this stage. So it'll be a voluntary requirement, and it'll be an opt-in arrangement, I believe, initially. So if you don't, and they're going to set it up so that if you don't want a digital ID, you won't be disadvantaged. But look, we've had so much discussion on this show about sites keeping IDs and keeping PII and all that. I mean, you'd be a mug not want to have a single point of, a secure place where your ID is stored that, you know, with an API, we'll get onto a bit of Apogee later. With, you know, that third parties can call on, you know, to identify who you are. That'd be a fantastic idea. You don't need all this site storing, your passport and your photo license and blah, 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 blah. You get it all from a known government authority. So we're going to try and I'm going to keep tracking that story as it goes on, but it's still something that's developing.
Yeah, I agree. That's a great initiative. Can't wait, to be honest. I think my driver license is the last thing in my wallet that I need. Before it was like a PTV for the public transport, Victoria for trains. Yeah, so now you can get this into your Google wallet.
Don't have digital licenses in Victoria? I thought we had digital licenses.
No.
Dimmy, you're missing out. Check it out.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah, New South Wales got one,
right? So I have a Service New South Wales app here. I can unlock it with my biometrics.
Mm.
And then in there I have my, when it loads, doesn't seem to be loading, there we go, driver's license right in there like that. And I can sign in the clubs. I can show that to police officers. It's awfully legit. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I'm very much jealous.
So I don't carry a wallet anymore. I've got the two. I've got my credit card and my driver's license in there, and that's it. That's all I need.
Yeah,
I can pay for the Opal trains with my credit card. I do have an Opal card to pay for the trains and buses, but I can pay with my credit card as well. And then finally, before we do get on with the news items, I know I've said that already, but I fixed the switch. I fixed the 3560 switch that was broken last week. And yes, I've set it up. It's now my vSAN switch for my GCVE environment. And sure enough, I opened that bad boy up. I've never opened one of those switches up before. They're usually highly reliable and you don't need to. Took out the tiny PCB, which is the size of your credit card, up in the top corner. And yeah, the little micro switch that was soldered to the board was actually the solder joints were just broken. And it was four pads on it. And I just re-soldered that with heaps of solder. And yeah, Bob's your Prime Minister, it was working again.
Nice.
So, yeah, if you're working with one of those switches, then the fix is really easy. Anyone with the most basic soldering skills can fix that. And you've got yourself a fully functional switch. I had the latest firmware there for it, so I upgraded all the microcode, and I've got all the new features, and it's just a fantastic piece of gear now. Saved from the rubbish bin.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, you know, reuse, reduce.
That's so, it.
Yeah, recycle. So,
all right, should we get on with the news items?
Yes, yes. Plenty of interesting things.
We do have some interesting things today, and there's going to be a bit of talk today about high-performance computing, NVIDIA, AI, all the rest of it, all the good juicy stuff. And to kick things off, we've got announcing Cloud HPC Toolkit for Blueprint for AI ML with NeMo framework on A3 VMs. And NeMo is going to come up a bit later as well. Now, you brought this to my attention, didn't you? I mean, what's this all about?
Yeah, it's basically about how to create a supercomputer in a Google Cloud if you want to. And yeah, so you would think that such a niche thing, but this is all about having a blueprint. So if you need one, you can easily create it using that blueprint that Google provided. Just shows, I guess, how much in demand. I guess the main purpose is probably like training LLMs and like using it for the AI purposes. And usually you would create a blueprint, like one company would ask you, another client would ask you, third client would ask you, and 10 clients ask, like, you would say, maybe we should just create something reusable for all of them. So I guess it just shows how much in demand high performance computing now is.
Yeah. So the blueprint helps you spin up HPC systems which run on A3s, which we've discussed on the show before, using H100 Tensor Core GPU. So that sort of gives you an out of the box experience, right? And just with a flick of a wrist, you can spin that up, and then from there you're programming your LLMs and doing your AI ML workloads.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Interesting bit, I guess. If you look at the architecture diagram in there, it's not using GKE, which I was very much surprised, because you would think that it's kind of like cluster of VMs. But I guess because scheduler, well, it's using the different scheduler, that SLARM, right? That orchestrates your instances. So that's, I guess, why it's like it's kind of the replacement for the, I suppose, like a GKE orchestrator, if you use it for normal, not high performance computing.
Yeah. But we will get onto that later, because you could run NeMo on GKE, or you could run it on the new NVIDIA kit, which we'll get onto later as well. But this is cool. This helps you do that straight out of the box, which is nice.
Mm.
And another new feature that's been come online, which includes AI as well, it's just everything at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah.
Introducing Security Command Center Enterprise, the first multi-cloud risk managed solution fusing AI-powered SecOps with cloud security. Now that I had a look at this, there's a little video which I'll link in the show notes. But basically what this is doing, security teams can get a single view of their posture controls, active threats, cloud identities, data, and more, while integrating remediation and issue accountability into the end-to-end frameworks for a converged cloud risk management platform. So it does it all.
Yep, yeah.
It does it all.
Yeah.
With a sprinkling of AI as well.
Yeah. The one thing that I liked, and when I was reading that, that announcement is, and it's something that I was also touching on like last year when I was giving a talk on DevSecOps, and I'm just read it from here, that build on our Google Security Fabric, Security Command Center Enterprise can help to break down the silos of tools, teams, and data that separate cloud security and enterprise security operations, And that's, I believe, like we actually have plenty of tooling that helps you to set up very good like DevSecOps like visibility and like pretty much like, from tools point of view, I feel like we kind of covered. But those silos that you've got when you look at your dev team and your operations platforms team and then your security team, I believe that's really like the biggest problem. In the field. So yeah, if you in the security command center is so the tools that where all of those teams can collaborate and have visibility on what's happening, and the data teams, mm-hmm. yeah, that's which mm-hmm. is also I think very important. So yeah, I think it's like great tool, very good step forward.
And so this is pulling all those tools together in a single pane of glass. And it's using some AI smarts to, alert or notify of those sort of highly critical and multi-vector vulnerabilities that you may have in your environment.
Mm, yeah, yeah. Also, by the way, I was like probably related on the DDD Melbourne. I was like chatting with a lady who is like security engineer, but now she's also teaching security in one of the universities. And then she said a very interesting thing that if you think that the problem starts from unis, because they do the security as a separate. Right, it's a separate diploma. So if you have your computer science where you got all your programming languages and like you got all your databases and like pretty much everything, right? It covers everything except security. And security, you got it separate. Like it's not even as a separate subject, but it's like a separate. Yes, it's a separate diploma that you're getting. And she's actually saying that this might be one of the problems. So if you do computer science, you're not necessarily doing security. And then when you're coming out of the uni and going to work, then like you got all these different security partners and other who is like trying to make what you're doing secure, which is probably not.
Whereas you should think from the ground up, from the beginning, set out with the security mindset. It's like, yeah, sure, I could do that, but is that secure? Is that the most, is that the secure way to do it?
Yeah, yeah.
Start with that approach from the beginning across all your disciplines, right? All your IT disciplines.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's what I was like. And yeah, I've never thought about it. I thought, oh, well, that's actually interesting. Yeah, it's a very, very interesting perspective.
Jimmy, coming from operations, I come from an operations background. Absolutely. That's what you think of, right? You think, I could assign everyone with a UID of 0. And give everyone root access, and that'd be great. That'd solve all the problems. But is that the most secure way to do it? Yeah. Right? Probably not. Right?
Yep. Yeah.
So have a look at that one. Check that one out. That's probably for the new features from Google this week. But I wanted to move on here with the next sort of article. The Victorian government continues cloud shift with Google deal. So Victorian government has signed a whole-of-government deal with Google Cloud as part of a long-term transformation of its agency's digital transformation. Now, they previously did have deals with AWS and Azure, but this one specifically calls out access to the cloud vendors' data analytics, artificial intelligence, and other capabilities, which I assume would be related to data and AI as well.
Yeah.
I like this one.
Yeah, great news. And I hope now I'll get my digital driver license faster, you know. if Google is in the game, then I believe it's just matter of weeks.
A matter of time. Well, here's the thing. New South Wales government have done it already. And there was a politician at the time who was actually my local member, Victor Dominello. He's a great advocate of digital solutions and digital transformation. He's now engaged by the federal government to look at, the ATO, Medicare, and that whole schmozzle that's happening. Right? And if you've ever tried to navigate that, then you know it's crazy. Try and streamline all of that. So. It doesn't make sense for the Victorian government to just go and reinvent the wheel. I mean, it's been done, right? The Service New South Wales knows how to do it. It's there already. They obviously, it's all would have been done with modern architectures, so it'll be repeatable and doable again.
Yeah.
So let's hope they use what's there already, and it's quick for you guys. You can come out of the dark ages and get yourself some digital licenses.
Yeah. Copy paste. That's what we want.
Copy paste. Yes, that's a great one. And, you know, for governments, it's hard. For governments like this, they're clinging on to the old ways, right? If anything else, the governments are going to do that, right? We've got to host it ourselves. We've got to look after it ourselves. For them to sort of come around and see the transformation that's possible, the new way of doing things, and to get that tick of approval, that's actually a big deal for governments.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. And I'm actually not sure how it's, well, I'm not sure how it works on the government. With some people who I would talk that are working on government projects, they're different than, you know, commercial companies. So commercial companies, some of them, they might have like a very big, you know, workforce of like IT specialists with like, let's say, solution architects and stuff in-house, and then they can use consultancies and others to like do more of like a hands-on stuff. But it seems to be a little bit different with the governments. That's, I guess, also where they worry, because I heard that some projects, government projects, they would be like completely outsourced, and then like they don't really go the way like it's been planned.
Costing a lot more.
Like it's at census, like, yeah, one of the when we couldn't get to it, and yeah, there were some other examples as well, but it's kind of, I guess, yeah, that it seems to be like that, I don't know, that's requirements and like, you know, leadership and stuff, it should come from the actually who need the system rather than outsource the whole thing.
So they get what they want at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, moving on. We mentioned Apigee before. Apigee Telecom reduces API delivery time by 50% with Apigee. Now, I've started on a little bit of Apigee training, so I'm about to learn all about this in our old cloud skills boost there. They've got a great pathway on Apigee. And some labs and things like that. So go and check that out if you're not in Cloud Skills Boost. But basically, Apigee allows you to build APIs based on Swagger, I believe. And you can be CRUD as well. You can do all your gets and your puts and set everything up. Why is this so special, Dimmy?
Well, I believe that Apigee is a great product, and Google Inc. made very good choice when they bought it. I used to work with it like many years ago in some like a big insurance companies that were using it, but then back in the days you'd need to install it all right on your servers and stuff. And what Google brought in is actually added different options of how you can consume it. That ApigeeX, which is pretty much, you know, like a SaaS product, whereas like Control Plane is running in Google. It's really just state of the art for API gateways, I believe, because it has all the power that Apigee provides you. And that's, I guess, like if you compare with others, like the functionality and the number of features, I don't think that there is any other API gateway that can really compete. But then if you go this ApigeeX, which is pretty much, you know, you don't need to run any infrastructure for it, that just becomes even easier. I know that Apigee, that article, they're using Apigee Hybrid, which is again like, right, it's just another option where it's like you actually, some of the things are running like in your data center or in your cloud, and some will be offloaded to Google, and so you just have more control over the data and where the data resides. And so
that's the back end services for the APIs.
I don't think that if you look for the like API gateway for enterprise, I don't think there is much many options, to be honest. So if you look at more lightweight solutions, there are, Yeah, but if you're using ApogeeX, it's also like very easy to start using it. So yeah,
and of course the beauty with using Apogee on Google is it integrates with all the other Google services, the logging, the monitoring, identity and access management. It's just all integrated out of the box.
Yeah. So that's that's awesome. And I love the numbers from TPG as well, and that they mentioning the fact how easy it was to do it.
300 underlying systems, they're saying, and we've had a consistent experience consuming APIs exposed by both TPG for internal and external consumers. So they're slowly going through and pulling all their in-house systems under a single API and making it a lot easier. And what they're saying, and the kind of the point of this article is that they've been able to bring that pipelining down, that integration pipelining down from what was previously 4 weeks, and now they do it in 2 weeks. So the whole front end, the whole API, the whole Google Cloud part is all infrastructure as code and a full CI/CD pipeline. And then their back end systems, well, they've just got to connect it up. And they're slowly going through their entire environment and doing that and bringing teams on board to do that. A lot simpler, a lot quicker, and obviously a lot cheaper as well in the long run.
Yeah. And I guess, just to highlight one more time that they're like most of the infra is still right Amazon and AWS, but then the fact that Google is actually very open for this hybrid cloud idea, and they the same with the Security Command Center Enterprise that we were like just talking minutes ago. It's all multi-cloud. Yeah. The same with Apigee, like it doesn't matter where your backend is running, that's like you can just use Apigee as a service and plug it in, which is I believe it's great. And it's just that there's no feeling of vendor lock-in as well. It's like if, let's say, it would say, if you want Apigee with all the features, then you need to run backend on Google Cloud. And then, you know, it's just, I don't think it's a healthy kind of practice of doing that. I'm very glad that Google is not going that way with any products that they're delivering as part of the Google Cloud. Yeah, so that's awesome.
All right, I'll stick a link for that in the show notes. Go and have a read, although we've probably given you the crux of it just then. But here on GCP Life, we like to issue the odd warning. And Dimmy, you got a little surprise email come into your inbox recently about exposed service keys. Now, I will link to a blog article where John Wago discusses this problem because he had the same thing. But basically, Google do not want you to have service account keys exposed in your repos anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. It's another step forward to make sure that all your systems are secure. Well, I guess starting with that, and that's very, I guess, it's a good next step. Probably the next step would be eliminating any service account keys altogether, because with a workload identity federation, which is probably you try to use by default instead of using service account keys. But before workload identities, you didn't really have many options. So service account keys would be the default options that you'll opt in for. But the fact that Google is now scanning like public repositories and like other places, and if they found your service account key, then by default they will actually disable it. And then
this is the thing.
So that's very 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 bold, I would say, but I believe that's a right direction. So just don't expose your service account keys, right?
So the crux of it is, as you said there, if you have a Google service account key in a public repo and it is discovered by Google, they will disable that service account key.
Yeah. Yeah.
So regardless of what your app's doing or what your thing you require, Stuff's going to break. Stuff is going to break. This is why they're giving you plenty of chance to do this. This is happening from June 16 this year. And the letter goes on to say something of the effect, we're writing to let you know that Google is introducing an organizational policy change on June 16. This change allows organization administrators to define how Google Cloud should respond if we become aware that a private service account key has been publicly exposed. And then they go on to say, you know, service account keys must be kept private, blah, 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 as we've heard before. So they're integrating with several programs, including GitHub scanning. And I assume they'll be scanning other publicly available source repos as well.
Yeah. I like the options for this org policy. So the default one is disable key, which will disable. But the other option called wait for abuse. So it's just so it's not like a, you know, like a turn off or disable or something. It's like wait for abuse. It's just like, yeah. So it's going to happen, just a matter of time. So it's better to, yeah, you know, get something broken now and like rotate your key or make sure that you're not using it rather than just wait for the time when someone will use it.
Do it in a controlled way, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Before you end up on the news.
Yeah. Now if like you have outage, you will need to check DNS and then your service account keys.
Always check DNS first.
Yeah.
All right, enough chatter. Let's get on with the AI wars. All right, first came off the ring. NVIDIA have thrown down the gauntlet and they've released the Blackwell platform. Go and have a look at this thing. This is mind-bending what this thing can do. So, where do you start with this, Jimmy? This came to my attention via a video on YouTube that had Jensen doing his, performance on stage, and they go into so Blackwell's a it's a platform, not a CPU or a GPU per se. It's an entire platform. You can get this thing in a rack system, and there's a backbone and there's a whole integration that goes along with it. But the core of this Blackwell environment is the NVIDIA GB200 Grace Blackwell Superchip. Right, this connects two NVIDIA B200 Tensor Core GPUs. Now, we talked about the Tensor Core, was it the 100, just a minute ago. This thing is 25 times faster. Right, so just gather that for a second. And it's two stuck together. And they're stuck together with Tensor Core GPUs to the NVIDIA Grace CPU with an over 900 gig per second ultra-low NV chip-to-chip interconnect. So NVIDIA don't care about the laws of physics. They just, you know, up the throughput and make it work somehow, right? Somehow.
Yeah, and it's, If you just read what it means, it's just like a trillion parameter large language models, which is, it's
stupid, right? Yeah. Like the numbers are mind bending. Yeah. 1 trillion parameter.
Yeah. Well, that's actually another funny story from my DDD. I was speaking to like a senior software dev, and apparently he just 3 months ago he started studying electrician
electrical engineering.
Yeah, electrical engineering. Yeah, yeah, because he was saying in 5 years time no one will need, well, at least no one will need the same amount of software engineers that we have now. And
machines will be programming themselves.
Yeah, and when I'm reading those these like articles like this, where it's like, trillion parameter large language models, and like the pace, it's all evolving. It's you start believing. Maybe I should pick something for myself as well.
Yeah, the H100 Tensor GPUs We reported on those shows, those CPUs on this show, not less than a year ago, and that was a big deal when they came out. Now we're talking B200 tensor cores, 25 times the ability. So it goes on. They've got some numbers here in the chip. Packed with 280 billion, that's billion with a B, transistors.
Yeah.
Just take that in for a second. Two rectile limit GPU dies connected by 10 terabits per second chip-to-chip link in a single unified GPU. I mean, how many frames are you going to get with that when you play your Fortnite?
Yeah. And the other positive on that one is that it's 25 times less cost and energy consumption. I'm very happy that this is actually also taken into consideration when developing. So it's not just, you know, getting numbers up, but also a bit of care about planet.
Yeah, that's right. It does cost less to run it and less power. Now, interesting sort of sidebar. I was listening to another podcast, Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. If you're into science at all, go and have a listen. That's one of the longest running podcasts on the web. I'll give them a free plug. They recently did an article, covered a story on the global power consumption. Now, the interesting thing is, for the last sort of 30, 40 years, the global power consumption has remained constant. And why is that, right? Yes, we are consuming more power, but we're getting efficiency returns. So things like LED lights, right? They use less power, right? Everything's becoming more and more efficient, right? But yes, overall, there are more things consuming power, but everything's becoming more efficient. So the consumption level has remained steady. Now, in the last sort of 5 years, or sort of even very recent, the last 2-3 years, suddenly there's a peak in power consumption. Why is that? Right? Well, two big things you can think of, right? Data centers and AI, right? Things like this, and electric vehicles, right? So suddenly we're starting to see this peak in demand that's occurring. Let's hope we can sort that out with renewables and bring that back to a flat curve. But, yeah, as you say, it is nice to see that they are considering the power consumption because, you know, it's expensive to run these things.
Yeah, 100%.
But, yeah, I'll link the video from Jensen in NVIDIA and, boy, oh, boy, this is no one is coming close to what these guys are producing in computing at the moment. And, of course, if you've got all that computing power, you're going to need something to run on it. And that's where NeMo comes in. Now, here we're going to talk about NeMo running on GKE, but I don't see why you couldn't run NeMo on your Blackwell infrastructure as well.
Yes, yeah.
So what's NeMo all about? We mentioned it earlier in the top of the show, but we talked about the blueprint for NeMo, but here we've got NeMo running on GKE. How's this different?
Yeah, well, the NeMo is like specifically, the first thing that it's open source, but it's specifically built for developing enterprise-grade generative AI models, which is great. And again, it's like a software and hardware stack, right, that it's all using NVIDIA state-of-the-art technology. That's a complete package, and you can use GKE to run it, which is again, I guess, state of the art managed Kubernetes cluster. So you don't need to worry about about all your horizontal scaling. I suppose that's what the GKE will give you. Yeah, and then you can install NeMo and do all your AI in there.
Because you're not running this on daggy old, x86 architecture or AMD machines, right? You're spinning up A3 nodes. You probably want a lot of SSD. You're using H100 Tensor GPU. So it's not a standard GKE cluster in that sense, right? NeMo helps you build that out a lot more easily. Am I grokking that right?
Yeah, 100%. Yes, it's like it's using different scheduler there as well. Yeah. So that's a kind of custom build. Yeah.
Right. So this is exactly the sort of thing they will be using on Blackwell. And at the end of the day, I mean, what is it? Just a bunch of Python scripts? And a bit of PyTorch? I don't know.
Yeah, yes, TensorFlow and PyTorch, yeah. And, off you go.
I'm just opening the repo up here. What do we got? We got Bootstrap set up. Oh, there's a bunch of Terraform. Oh, I'm good with that. Okay, so, you got some modules there. A3, there you go. Yeah, so it just all spins it up with Terraform, and you're good to go. I just got to get someone else to pay the bill, and you're fine.
Yeah, that's about the bill. That's interesting because it's also like it's available on Marketplace, right? So you can like install it from Marketplace into your GCP project and start crunching. Yeah,
start ingesting all that data and training your models.
Yeah,
excellent. All right, so go and have a look at that. It certainly grabbed our interest. But I am seeing a healthy 48 minutes on the timer here, Dimmy. So we might have to get out of here. What do you reckon?
Yep, sounds good.
Excellent. Don't forget, you can go to iTunes, write a review for the show. You can contact the show, gcplife@kasna.com.au. And once you go to our YouTube channel, you find that pretty easily. Just go to YouTube, search for GCP Life and start the discussion there. Every episode will have a discussion thread. And don't forget, today's sponsor is Mantle Group. At Mantle Group, we make your Google Cloud solutions possible. Is that about it, Dimmy? We got anything else to add?
No. I think we got it perfect. You got it perfect.
We got it perfect as always. All right, we're out of here. We'll see you later. Bye.
Bye.
How's Ian? He was down here last weekend for our big housewarming party. He hired a big twin axle caravan, and he drove down from Queensland down to here and was going around, you know, checking things out. Spent some time at your minor caravan park, which is in my neck of the woods now. Said he loved it there. And then he was, a couple of days later, he was back up at Coffs Harbour, which is like up on the north coast of New South Wales. He seemed to be having a good time.